My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. My guest this week is Mike Finazzo, a wonderful filmmaker from Baltimore, Maryland. He opens up about the making of his feature films, how he funded them, how he cast them, crewed them, locations, gear, everything. So, without further ado, here's the interview. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this week, Mike Finazzo. Welcome, Mike. It's great to have you on the show.
Kyle, thanks for having me, Ian. It's my pleasure.
You know, I've been looking forward to this since we contacted each other. I really have. And just before we go on, I just want to let everybody out there know a little bit about you. So can you tell us a bit about yourself?
So I am a filmmaker from Baltimore, Maryland. I've just been obsessed and love movies my entire life. I do tend to have like a lot of like creative interests like throughout the years, but it always comes back to film. I've dabbled in stand-up comedy, and that stuck for about 8 years, which was a weird detour. It was very cool because I got to like meet a lot of people in that world, and a lot of that has kind of influenced, you know, films, and a lot of like those people have ended up in my movies and stuff.
The hardest job in show business. I mean,
you know what? I agree with that. And not because I did it, like I don't really do it anymore, so I could speak pretty honestly about it. But I envy people that make it look so easy. Wow. It is very, very difficult. There's no, when you're on stage, there's really no net. There's no re-editing it.
That's
film. So
you live or die on stage, right?
Exactly.
I did improv at Second City for like the learning Second City through their school, up until, you know, then I just gave up, but it was a lot of fun. I had a great time, but there's no way in hell I would do stand-up comedy. Just no way. It's just too dangerous.
Yeah, I envy improvisers as well. Like Kelly, who's the lead in our film, she's an improviser by trade and is part of the Baltimore Improv Group, which is kind of like, it's like our version of UCB or Second City. And she's brilliant at it. And that definitely kind of influences a lot of our films that we make and kind of like the creative writing there. Comedy is hard no matter how you do it, with a partner, by yourself. Crazy. Improvised.
Okay, I have a whole new respect for you, sir.
You're
crazy to be a filmmaker, because we all are. But to try stand-up, to do stand-up for 8 years, bravo, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
Man. Crazy. Okay, so when and how did you get started in filmmaking then? When was the transition to that?
So filmmaking came first. So, like, since I was a kid, I was just, like, obsessed with movies. Like, I think, like, everything, like, in my life comes back to, like, movies in some way, shape, or form.
Really?
Yeah, like, I just remember, like, man, being like 4 years old and being obsessed with Back to the Future. And like my parents would tell stories about, like, you remember like how they used to have like rental places where you rent like a TV or something?
Yes.
Well, like I remember like one time my dad went to pick up my mom at the grocery store, and you know, he was waiting for her, and he was like, my son's being quiet. My 3 or 4 year old son's being quiet. What's he doing? He just looks in the mirror, and I'm just in the back of his truck, and I'm just like staring through the window of this rental place, and I'm mouthing the words to Back to the Future because it's on TV, and I know every single word of it.
Wow.
So there's just like something that where I just started really young with this like fascination of thing. And then when I was a teenager and in high school, I was at my local Blockbuster several times a week and obsessed with Woody Allen movies and comedies, so any comedy I could watch. And I kept deep diving into these different, you know, indie films, and it's kind of always were, you know, especially like basically my teen years on, where like my sensibilities went to these like small independent movies that eventually I just started making them.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
But to answer your question, so I started trying to make films like, I guess like around 2005, and I made a few things that didn't get finished, and I have like one feature length film that like we showed once but like didn't go anywhere, and it kind of was like my student film.
Is that Wit's End?
No, that movie, so that movie was called The Life and Times of Andrew Quinn. Okay. And it was kind of like, it's kind of a weird like premise because it was a mockumentary, but it was like before, like it might've been like right before or right when The Office started.
Oh, okay.
So like when we made it, it was kind of like this like weird thing that like, maybe like if you like Spinal Tap, you'd get the aesthetic or Christopher Guest movies, but like it wasn't really that like common. And now everything is a version of a mockumentary. Seems like, or at least there was a phase where it was.
Yeah,
so we made that movie with just our friends, and it was just more of like an experiment to like say we made a movie, and we showed it once at like our local art house theater, and like it was cool to like watch with an audience. But really, like, it's not a good movie, and it's not available anywhere. But like, I think that for me, like, it did like show myself, like, oh, I can write a joke. Like, if you watch that movie with an audience, you know, there were a few, like, comedy pieces that, like, got really big laughs. And even though the movie doesn't hold up, it's like there definitely are elements where I can look back on it and go, oh, well, there's something there.
That has to buoy your spirits when you're writing comedy, which is the hardest writing to do.
Right, right.
I mean, you pick the toughest things, Mike.
Right.
Because when you're writing comedy and you get that laugh, that has to just give you energy.
Absolutely. And yeah, for, especially with, and it's different because, you know, after that I did stand up and there's that instant gratification to where, where it's like, if you tell a joke, you know right away if it's funny or not.
Absolutely.
With movies, you know, I remember making that first kind of like student film, Andrew Quinn, and like we're making it, and it's like, well, a few of these things are funny to us. I don't know if like it's funny to people. And then you watch it with a 200, you know, person audience, or 250 person audience at our local theater, and it's like, oh, well, that got a big laugh. It must work.
There you go.
So then after that, like I started doing stand up, and I kind of went on this like detour for like 8 years where it's like I always wanted to go back to movies, and I ended up kind of, I don't want to say success is relative, but I got pretty good at comedy and I got to travel a little bit doing that. And, but like, it was always going to come back to movies at some point. It eventually did with, when I made Wit's End, I guess like that was 4 years ago.
Right. So yeah, tell us a little bit about Wit's End. What was it about?
So Wit's End is a movie about a comedian. And it's kind of like, it's similar to Born in the USA in terms of, like, it's not a straightforward comedy.
Right.
Like, I think Born in the USA is way more of a drama than Wit's End was. I think Wit's End has way more laughs in it.
Right.
But basically, the inspiration for it came was I kept talking about wanting to make another movie. It had been like 7 years since I tried. And one day I was listening to, do you ever listen to Brian Koppelman's podcast?
No.
That Moment? So Brian Koppelman's, he's a great writer in his own right. He wrote, like one of the Ocean's 11's movies for Soderbergh. He wrote the movie Rounders. And now he has a podcast, and he has a lot of great writers and comedians and filmmakers on it. And he had Ed Burns on, who is known for making like low budget movies.
Yeah.
And they had this, I think it's still available on iTunes, that one episode, but it's like from like 2015. And they're just talking about how Ed Burns had made these like bigger movies that failed, and he couldn't get any of his like big budget movies made. And he had like a movie that he needed $3 million to make, this movie called Stooley. He had a big name cast attached to it, and just no one would finance it.
Wow.
So like out of that frustration, he made this like, you know, no budget movie on his own for like $50,000. It's called Nice Guy Johnny. And then after that movie became successful, and he followed it up with an even smaller movie called Newlyweds, which is his best movie.
I've seen Newlyweds actually.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's very like Woody Allen-esque, and it's the best of Ed Burns' talents.
Didn't he shoot that on DSLR?
Yeah, it was shot on the 5D, and I think it might be the first movie that was shot on the DSLR.
Yeah, it was one of them for sure.
Yeah, at least one of the first. So I'm listening to this conversation, and I just like all of a sudden become like motivated. Like I got to get off my ass and make a movie. Like there's no excuse.
Yes.
And my day job, I drive around a lot. Like I go from place to place, and I'm listening to this podcast. And like the first thing I do when the podcast is over is I drive back to my office, I steal a notepad, and I just start writing ideas for a movie.
Beautiful.
And something from that podcast and what I've heard from like a lot of filmmakers is to kind of practice resource filmmaking.
Exactly.
So kind of like base, you know, what you're doing on what you have available.
That's right.
So it's like, all right, well, I've been doing stand-up comedy for a good chunk of time. I have some funny people I know. I have one of my good friends owns a comedy club. One of the places I perform, like I became really good friends with the owner. I was like, he'll probably let us shoot there. And I just like started slowly building this movie.
Wow.
And we shot Wits End, which is a movie about a comedian who kind of goes through a personal tragedy.
Ooh.
And has to go out on the road and be funny, even though he's miserable.
Oh, wow.
And so it's kind of like a dramedy. And we shot it with a brilliant comedian from Baltimore named Jason Weems, who was a finalist on Last Comic Standing, who I just know for being a friend of mine. Yeah, he's got a reputation pretty big nationally.
Yeah.
And I was just lucky to get him just because it's like I got to know him personally through comedy and we became pretty good friends. So he starred in the movie. We shot it in a bunch of places I've done comedy in and put a bunch of our friends in it. And we shot this movie in about 18 days.
Wow.
And it really just like inspired me to where like, all right, this comedy thing's been fun and I've gotten okay at it. And, but like filmmaking's where I really should be.
So that's the sort of timing you went, okay, this is it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like just like making something that like works. It gets you excited to like keep doing it. And the other part for me is like I really love comedy. Like I like watching stand-up comedy.
Sure.
And there is definitely part of me that likes to perform and make people laugh, but like I do feel like with stand-up comedy it's not like the most of my talent. It's kind of like at the end of the day it's not ultimately like my goal isn't to make people laugh. Right. It's like, I really like the way like movies, I can do so many different things with that when I can't do it with stand-up comedy.
Exactly. In comedy, it's, you gotta keep it up here all the time.
Yeah. You gotta keep
be
it
laugh,
there,
laugh, laugh
the
all the time.
The
but with a film, you've got that flow. It's an ebb and flow. You can't keep the audience at a 5 excitement level through the whole thing or laughing through the whole thing. They need a break and
right,
you can roll
right.
that down. And well, I can tell you, Born in the USA, there were times where tension was ramping up and like I'm feeling awkward. And then all of a sudden,
right,
you know what I mean? And you need that release.
Right.
So it sounds like you did the very same thing with Wits End.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it reminds me of, like, when I was doing stand-up comedy, like, sometimes I would tell stories on stage.
Yeah.
And there would be, like, other comedians or club owners. They would say, that's a really great, engaging story, but, like, there's not enough laughs. You can't tell a 5-minute story
right.
with 2 jokes.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, I'd get invited to do these storytelling shows. And like the director of the storytelling show would be like, you know, you don't have to put so many laughs in this.
You just can't win.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like with film, it's just like, oh, well, you can do anything.
Exactly.
Like, if it is engaging or if it's or at least relatable, like there's so much, just so much room to play in.
Oh,
and also like when it comes to like comedy and movies, like to me, some of the funniest movies are dramas. Like,
really?
If you watch, like, Goodfellas is not a comedy. It's a hilarious movie.
But there's some scenes in there you just can't help but laugh.
Exactly. Like,
you
and,
can't help it.
I can think of, like, you know, like the times I've laughed hardest in movies. Like, I think very rarely that's been in a straightforward comedy. There's some brilliant comedies out there, but, like, to me, it's like there's as big of a laugh in a Scorsese movie or even like a, you know, some of like Cameron Crowe movies that are considered dramas.
There you go.
That, I think some of those movies are have way funnier moments than a studio copy.
Do you think, though, that with those movies that they intentionally sort of plant stuff like that to relieve tension?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like sometimes it's like I think there's a tension release. Sometimes I think that it also comes like from an audience member. When you're an audience member watching something,
right?
There's that moment that comes up when it's just least expected that it's just like real life.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if real life, some of the hardest I've ever laughed at, you know, with my family or like in at work or like just everyday life, it's been when the tension is the highest. It's been when something awful's happened and we're just trying to get through it and something funny comes up. And I think sometimes it comes from that tension. I think sometimes it just comes from the reality of the situation. Yeah. I think also comedy comes from the best place when it's least expected. And I think when you go to a 90-minute studio comedy, you're expecting a laugh every 30 seconds. And if you're not getting it, it's a disappointment.
Right.
But if you're watching something that's supposed to be serious and something hilarious
comes
out, like Joe Pesci asking, do you think do I amuse you?
Yeah.
Like, that's funny. And that's completely unexpected in that moment.
Yeah, and we hit a deer. you know, I mean, that was the moment for me. I just thought that was hilarious. We hit a deer. I need a knife. Let me borrow this knife. I'll bring it back.
Right, exactly.
So again, you can't help but laugh. So with Wits End, we'll consider that your first feature then, right?
Yeah, I consider that my first
feature. And you
finished feature that people saw.
Right. So you wrote it and you directed it. What was that like, first time directing like that?
I mean, I think when you do something, for the first time in general, like there's something nerve wracking about it. There's always, I'm a neurotic person by nature that second guesses myself. I'm a little crazy. So
aren't we all? To be a filmmaker, you gotta be.
And to do anything creative.
Yeah, you gotta have a little nuts in you.
I think that was
Robin Williams who said something about, you know, never lose your crazy.
Right. So I think that the thing I think I've been best at is just surrounding myself with really good people. And I've always like looked at like making any movie as like, all right, we're in a band. And it's like, I might be the lead singer, I might write the songs, but it's just like, we're all going to pull this in together, and I know a good idea is going to come from someplace. It doesn't have to be me.
Yeah.
So it's like, with like Wits End in particular, it's like, I have one of the funniest stand-up comedians working on this movie.
Yeah.
So it's just like, he came up with like so much, and just like being open and listening to other people's ideas, I think that's a strong suit of mine, and I think that like that's something that like any filmmaker can like benefit from.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Don't be a prima donna. Remember, it's a team effort. It truly is a team effort.
Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves when I see, for one, it sounds pretentious when people say a Mike Finazzo film. Like, it sounds pretentious, but also it's not true.
No.
Like, there's so many people that work on these things. It's an effort of a lot of people.
Yeah.
I always am happy to like listen to other people's ideas and take other people's ideas.
Right.
And, you know, I think that it's just really important to look at it as like a group effort.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm lucky that that's something I discovered with Wits End, and it didn't take me a while to discover that. Because I think it's made both movies I've made like, you know, so much better.
It has to. I mean, if you're open to it, like you said, and I think it's important to repeat, that great ideas come from anywhere.
Absolutely.
And now you've got people in this film who are playing the character, who have done a lot of, you know, soul searching to become this character.
Right.
And to not listen to them, that'd be crazy, in my opinion.
Is it okay if I jump ahead to something?
Yeah, please do. Go crazy.
What you said just made me think of that. Like, so there's a scene in Born in the USA where they watch the old Cary Grant movie,
yes.
This Girl Friday.
Yes.
And as scripted, or as in the, as written, they talk about the movie, and basically it's Kelly convincing Chris that this movie's good, and he wasn't that into it.
Right.
And in talking to Kelly, she's just like, so So first of all, I did tell both the actors, I want you guys to watch the movie. Like, I want to have like a genuine reaction to it. And, sure. You know, let's watch, all the three of us will watch the movie, then we'll have a conversation about it. So we watched the movie before filming, and Kelly's just like, you know, it's weird, but like as a woman, it's like, I hate that she is relying on the man, or like, right, the decisions of a man, and that she's kind of an asshole in this situation. Yep. And, yep, you know, I actually don't agree with what my character's saying. Wow. And I think that there are writer-directors that are precious about their own work, and like they'll be like, well, you know, I think that the character's right because I wrote it. Yeah. And, but instead, it's just like, all right, well, explain to me what you think about the movie and why. Wow. And we just had a great conversation about it. And essentially, the conversation we had is what is in the movie.
That's what it's, so it's funny. That's what, so it sounded like when you were telling me there. It's just like word for word what was happening in the film.
Yeah. So, like, and that's a perspective, wow, I wouldn't have had. And
that's brilliant.
Yeah. So, and that's her. And that's, you know, and I think that that, in terms of like bringing it back to like how I direct, or yeah, how to direct good performances, I think that like if you're open to that and like listen to your folks or your actors, like you're gonna get some of the most honest, natural performances, you know, even if you just have that open dialogue.
Yeah.
And even if you guys like don't disagree, even if you guys disagree about something, have that conversation, because I think that, you know, just having that conversation and understanding each other better is going to make your end product
better. That's
brilliant.
And
I think this is a case, that particular case where it was like Kelly got to be herself, and it made what I wrote better. Like in turn, it made, wow, the scene better, and it made her performance better because it was more real.
Yeah, that was a great scene, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, they kill it in every scene, but yeah, in that scene
they
I
do.
Love.
They do. So let's just go back to Wits End, and how did you fund it?
It's all self-financed, the, oh, both, boy, movies were. And they're not expensive movies.
Right.
I often joke that, like, if you see me, like, doing stand-up, or I also do wedding videography.
Right.
If you see me do one of those two things, I'm trying to finance a movie. like, with Wits End, like, that's, like, a $2,500 movie.
Oh, wow.
And I funded,
wow,
it by doing, like, a month on the road doing stand-up.
Wow.
Wow. And you know, Born in the USA was similar. Like that was all out of my own pocket as well.
Wow. So this is a film where you know, let's look at Wits End. This is a film where you had a very small crew, I imagine.
Yeah, so the crew was a sound guy, I was one of the cameramen, and my DP was the other camera guy. So, wow, like that was a three-man crew.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And what'd you shoot that one on?
So that was shot on a DSLR. It was shot on a Canon T3i, which is a great beginner camera.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But then again, any camera you have is fantastic when you think about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know? So what were some of the problems that you encountered along the way when you were making that film, when you were making your first one?
With Wits End, like, that was an easy movie to make in terms of, like, we didn't have huge production problems or anything like that. The hardest thing when you're making anything that cheap,
right,
you're relying on the generosity and talents of other people. So scheduling for both movies was definitely tricky. I think with Wits End, that was actually harder to schedule just because we have a comedian who's really busy and,
yeah,
in high demand, and he's in every shot of the movie.
Yeah.
So it's not like we could go, all right, well, we can have Jason for a week, then move on to something else.
That's
like,
right,
he is the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like that one, like just working around his schedule was probably the biggest challenge.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, it sounds like it was. So, and now, can people see that right now?
Yeah. If you go to BornInTheUSAfilm.com,
yeah,
like there's an other works section, and Wits End's on there. It's free for anybody to watch.
I have to watch it. Well, I have to watch it.
If you like Born in the USA, I think you would like
it. I loved
it.
Born in the USA.
Yeah, there's definitely like stuff about like Wits End where it's like I look back at it now, and I still love the story of that movie. I love every actor that's in that movie.
Yeah.
There's some technical stuff that I just wish I had the knowledge of, and also just the technology now. Like, this stuff, like, is getting so much better quickly.
It is.
That I wish that, like, we had some of the equipment we did 4 years ago to make that movie. Wow. And it's not that it's making it a more expensive movie. It's just the technology has evolved.
Yeah,
it's a very watchable movie, and it's definitely, Jason's brilliant in it.
Well, people, you got to see Wit's End and go to boardintheusa.com.
Boardintheusafilm.com.
Oh, film.com. I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, awesome.
Film.com, and we'll get that. So you've already given some advice about directing, but is there any other advice you can give for a first-time director?
I mean, I think for, like, any director, like, we talk about the resource filmmaking, like, build around what you have. I have, like, so many friends that, like, talk about making movies.
And they don't.
They don't. And it's not, you know, it's not laziness. It's not that they don't have the talent to. It's like, I think they have these, like, big ambitions of, like, this is the thing I have to do.
Yeah.
And I think ambition's great, but I think with some of this stuff, you know, when you don't have the resources or funding, you're just not going to get it made.
Yeah.
So, like I said, like, with like, Wit's End, I definitely, like, thought to myself, it's like, all right, I have a comedy club that's beautiful and is going to look amazing on film. I have a bunch of really talented friends. Wow. That's what I'm going to start with.
Beautiful.
So definitely, like, whatever you have access to, like, that's what you, you know, should begin the process with.
You know, that I preach this, especially about cameras and gear on this show, is that you don't have to have the top end camera and the best of everything to do a film. You just don't. And if you make that list that you talk about, your resource list, what gear do I have? What locations do I have? What people do I have? What props do I have? Make a huge list of the things that you do have rather than the things that you don't.
Yeah, and because there's always going to be something you don't have,
exactly.
You know, like, you could have a great camera, but it's not an Arri Alexa.
No.
And if you could have an Arri Alexa and you'd be like, well, it's not 35mm
That's
film.
Right.
So it's
never going to be happy.
Yeah, it's there's always going to be a reason to, you know, doubt your resources, and there's always going to be things you don't have. So it's like, definitely start with what you do have and build around it.
Beautiful. That, you know what? That's fantastic advice for anybody. First-time director, first-time filmmaker, anybody.
Yeah. Just,
that's a great piece of advice. So now I want to focus on your latest film, which is Bored in the USA. Can you please give us a little description of what the film is about?
Yeah, so Bored in the USA, I call it an unrequited love story. And it's basically about two people that spend a day in Baltimore before one of them leaves the country. And the lead of the film is Kelly Lloyd, who is a wonderful actress who is in Wit's End. And she kind of plays a character also named Kelly, who's a bored housewife.
Yep.
And she's kind of, like, unhappy and unsettled in her life and her marriage. And she's kind of, like, searching for something. And she spends a day with Chris, who is a traveler and is a dude who's kind of, like, seen the world, but he's also kind of, like, in this place where he isn't settled and kind of, like, doubting, like, what he should do next. They basically hang out for a day before he goes back to London.
Well, yeah, so you worked with Kelly, Kelly Lloyd in Wit's End, and you knew her from improv comedy sort of area. But how did you come to cast Chris Milner?
So Chris is a stand-up comedian.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he never acted before this movie.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, he's so good.
Holy crap, let him know he should be in acting.
He should
do way more of it. The two of them together were fantastic.
Oh, cool. I'll tell them both.
Oh, they were amazing. Yeah. Because I went on the ride with them, they sucked me into the whole thing. Their acting was brilliant. And they acted off each other very, very well. The chemistry was just great.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Something that's interesting about that is the original idea for the movie, it was basically about a middle-aged white dude who spends a day with, like, a younger Indian woman before she leaves the country.
Right.
And honestly, we couldn't cast an actress. We looked for an Indian actress. We tried to change the ethnicity of the person, and just couldn't find the right person. So basically, I went back to the draw. It goes back to resource filmmaking. I was like, all right, well, what do I have access to?
Yeah.
I don't have an Indian actress. I have Kelly, who I've worked with, who's been awesome in Wits End and also a few shorts that I've made.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if she, instead of having like a schlubby middle-aged dude, like what if we turn that into a housewife and we found somebody else that was leaving the country?
Right.
And that just made me think further. And I was like, all right, well, do I know any actors? I was like, well, he's not an actor, but like Chris Milner is incredibly charismatic and charming and so naturally funny. And like knowing, if you ever get a chance to see his stand up, he's really a thoughtful, brilliant guy. I've gotten to become friends with him over the last, you know, 8 or 9 years. Wow. So I was like, well, that would be an interesting choice to have a housewife and Chris spend a day together before he leaves the country.
And we have to mention that Chris is British.
He is from London.
Yeah,
so.
He's from London, and that's part of the story, is that he's going back to London, and he's just unsure of what's waiting for him.
Exactly.
You know, just it's heartbreaking. Just a beautiful story. Seriously. Loved it. And you made some really bold choices in this film, not the least of which was to shoot it in black and white.
Yeah, so I'm so proud of the way the movie looks.
I don't know who your cinematographer is. I can't remember his name.
Kevin Brennan. Yeah.
Fantastic job. It looks beautiful.
Oh, awesome.
Just beautiful.
And so to give him like so much credit, like we shot the movie. So after Wits End, I have a lot of love for black and white movies. And I love like, you know, French New Wave. And I love like so many movies that come back to that grainy black and white aesthetic. Yeah. And classic films like His Girl Friday that we show in the movie. And I wanted to make a black and white movie, and honestly was like too scared to pull the trigger on it. So the idea was like, we're going to shoot it on DSLRs, and we'll have the option to cut it both ways. So we could have made it in color or black and white. But when it got to editing, I was, you know, looking at the footage in color, and I was like, this is fine. Like it's okay. But then as soon as I put it in black and white, it had this like milky quality. I was like, oh, well, this is the movie.
It was beautiful. It really did. There were some shots in that film that just blew me away.
Yeah. So basically the way we shot it was we had principal photography with those actors, which was about 14 days.
Okay.
Kevin and myself and another, a third person we added to the crew was Andrew Fair, and basically they operated the A and B cameras for all the dialogue scenes.
Oh, so you had a two-camera shoot.
Yes, we always had two cameras going, both DSLRs.
Yeah.
And then all like the shots of Baltimore throughout the movie, those were ones I shot. So basically, whenever we needed I'd be editing the movie, and whenever we needed a shot, I would be like, "All right, let's go into Baltimore City and shoot as much as we can."
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, brilliant! Yeah, it's a real love letter to Baltimore, I have to say.
Oh, thanks! And the compliment I love getting the most is how people say Baltimore looks really inviting in our
movie. It does, actually. You made it look very inviting.
Look that way. I'm really proud of that aspect of it. And the thing that I've kind of said at Q&As at film festivals, and there's been some great Baltimore filmmakers like John Waters and Barry Levinson.
Oh, yeah.
I think that they always have versions and takes on The Wire that are very unique and interesting.
Sure.
Like, if you watch John Waters' view of Baltimore, it's such a specific, eccentric, quirky thing.
Right.
And Barry Levinson has his version of it, like in Diner. And then if you watch a TV show like The Wire, that's an even different look at it. And for me, you know, I wanted to just, like, show, like, my version of Baltimore that I love and get to see and haven't seen yet in a movie.
Well, I have to say that whoever was on your crew, everybody, kudos to them. I already said it looked fabulous. It really did. But the sound quality was fantastic too. You must have done a lot of ADR, It was great. It matched. It sounded great. It looked great. Your acting was fantastic. The editing. Did you edit? Who edited?
I edited the film.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Another great job to you.
I use a fake name on there, but you
did a great job editing the film. You really did. It was fantastic. It caught me from start to finish. Now, listen, I gotta say, like, I don't want to knock, you know, these big films, these, you know, theatrical releases, these studio films, these blockbusters. I'm not knocking them at all, because I go to see those too. I mean, I'm entertained by them, but I'm hungry for stories like this one. That's more intimate, right? It's just it's more intimate, and I can be part of the, like, just, it's a quiet story, and it's all about story. It's not about things blowing up or somebody's head being blown off. It's about story. It's about people and characters, and so I'm not knocking one over the other. I think there's room for both.
Yeah, I hope so. And thank you for saying that. And I love so many different kinds of movies, and it does worry me in some ways that, like, it seems, you always read these articles about, like, is there room in movie theaters for, you know, small independent movies? And it seems like there's this gap widening where everything that's being released is either a huge Marvel movie or it's a tiny, tiny, tiny micro-budget movie.
Yeah, exactly.
There's mid-level, the $20 million movie doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you look at the recently, what was it, Booksmart?
Booksmart,
you know,
which I saw, and I'm glad I got to see it in the movies, and I wish more movies like that would come out. Yeah,
I have to, you know, it's things like mid-90s and Eighth Grade was unbelievably fantastic. I just,
so good,
you know. So it's movies like, and this is one I would put into that category. It's and more people need to see it. Speaking of which, now before, well, I'll get to that in a second, but you shot this on DSLRs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes. So the movie Born in the USA was shot on a Sony AS-7 II.
Really?
Was the B camera, and the A camera was a Canon 5D Mark III.
And a 5D. Holy crap. Listen, and you know, it's people need to say, like, how many people out there who talk about making a movie already have a DSLR?
Yeah,
just one.
Absolutely.
That's all you need. Just one.
Or even an iPhone.
iPhone. Tangerine was shot on an iPhone. We're talking about any camera you have, right? Please go out. But I think it's time to talk about writing. Because it's one thing to say, well, I've got this great movie. I'm gonna go and I'm going to shoot this movie and it's going to be great. I've got this camera. I'm going to use my phone. But you and I both know it starts on the page. You got to get it right. And I think, based on what I saw in Born in the USA, you nailed the script.
Well, so it's funny you say that. I think I alluded to this earlier.
Yep.
So the movie is actually based on an outline. Mm-hmm. The dialogue in the movie is improvised.
That's why it's so good.
Yeah, so that's brilliant. A tribute to the actors, and something that I'm really proud of. It's, and I appreciate you saying that. A lot of people credit the script, and to me, I take that as the biggest compliment, because I've watched improvised movies that seem to meander forever, and you can tell they're improvised.
Yep.
So I like that we have an improvised movie that's pretty tight, and there's not a lot of fat on it, and it seems scripted, and that's a tribute to the actors.
You know what?
Being able to pull it off.
One of the things that I notice, especially first-time movie makers, is they spend a lot of time. You talk about, you know, it's a little bit of verbal diarrhea, just constant talking, and they hold shots too long. And you're right. You cut the fat. That's why I said your editing was really well done.
Because there was
no point where I was going, move on, move on, move on. You know what I mean? I was with the story.
Right.
I didn't need to say that, because it just felt, it flowed. It was really nicely done. And the fact that they were improvising that dialogue fantastic. It made the dialogue sharp, really sharp.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think that when people like put down the improvised movie, I think that sometimes it's because it's not being done well. So the way we do it anyway is like it's organized chaos where it's not like we have a blank page and we have cameras like, well, what are we going to film today? It's like there's a pretty detailed outline in terms of, like, we know the point of every scene. We know where it's going to start, where it's going to go, and where it's going to end. Sometimes we do have scripted dialogue in a different form. But, you know, I think that it leaves so much room for these, like, honest, great moments. And it's like we know what's going to happen, but we kind of steer it together. And I think that the other part of it is, I think sometimes when I see, like, improvised movies, you can tell when it's improvised because you have one camera angle and it's a wide shot. Right. And you could tell this riffing has been going on for a while, right, and the editor has no idea where to cut it.
Right.
For us, we talk out the scene. We rehearse it a little bit. And that rehearsal and that first and second take, we're basically writing the first draft of the script.
Wow.
And by like takes 3 and 4, they're doing the same thing over and over again. So it might as well be scripted by the time we're finished it. They're just putting it in their words.
Wow. That's incredible. So, seriously, that's just beautiful. So then I was going to ask you what a typical screenwriting day is for you. But really, it's just trying to give yourself a framework to work around.
Right. And yeah, and there was like, it was probably like a 40-page document. So there was some writing involved.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of it really is like the writing process. A lot of it is just, it's kind of figuring out the characters and it's kind of like figuring out the set pieces and just like kind of like creating the world in your head. Like there is a lot of like thinking going on. There is a lot of like planning going on, but like that time isn't spent writing the 100-page script whatever it would have been.
Yeah. You're not the first person who's done this from, what did they call it? A treatment or a scriptment,
Alex Ferrari's been on the show.
And famous for doing
he's
that.
He's done it before. Yeah. And before him, like the Duplass brothers have done variations of that. And, it's definitely not a new thing. I think the cool thing about it is it's like there's so much wiggle room in doing it. And like there's ways to put your own stamp on it. I think that makes like for a unique thing. Like, like I watched, Alex Ferrari's first movie and
This is Meg.
And, you know, he had like ours, it's based on a scriptment, but like, I think based on what I've heard in his podcast and interviews, like it sounds like it was done a little bit differently than ours.
Yeah.
Just like neither one of us do it the way the Duplass brothers or Joe Swanberg do it. So I think that's cool that it kind of gives you room to kind of play and kind of like find your voice and make it the unique way you want to make it.
Make it your own. And you did.
Yeah.
Well, you can honestly say this is mine.
Yeah,
you know,
it's Kelly's and it's Chris's.
Well,
and,
you know what though? It's from your brain. It started with you, so you got to give yourself some credit for that. For
I appreciate that. I think just one more thing about the writing, if it's okay. The reason I started doing that too is like I've written full blown scripts with like mixed results.
Really?
I think the biggest like issue I've always had with it is like I've come up with interesting stories, but all the characters sound like me when I write them.
Oh.
And sometimes that's okay with writers. Like, you know, all of Aaron Sorkin's characters sound like Aaron Sorkin and Woody Allen characters sound like him for better or worse. But like for me, there was just like something kind of like stilted about it that didn't work. And
fair enough.
It's just kind of like honestly just pretty bland. So it's like this way, the way we did like Born in the USA and the way we did Wit's End, like we got shades of these characters and kind of like three-dimensional people out of these characters when I don't think we would have if I would have scripted them traditionally.
Right. Well, they you know, the fact that they were doing the improv, that certainly helped it. Did you sort of improv your like where you shot, your locations, or did you nail those down first?
Yeah, so they're always the set pieces were written. Like, okay. So the pagoda scene, like, right. It was, we knew they were going to go to Patterson Park and they were going to talk about His Girl okay. Friday. Yeah. And we kind of knew the beats they would touch.
Right.
The same thing with, like, the graffiti alley scene. Yeah. Like, knew it was going to be shot there. We knew where the conversation was going to start okay. and where it would fair go enough. And where it would end. So, yeah, there was, like, in that 40-page outline we had, there was definitely a lot of, like, structure there. But that's where the improv came in the most, was in the dialogue.
You know what? I have to ask you, you mentioned music earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I found to be a bit of a contrast was, here you are bored in the USA and you start off with this French song.
Right.
And
right.
It kind of put a smile on my face. I'm thinking, bored in the USA, this is different.
Right. So the French music I personally love. I know it's polarizing with some people. But I liked it for two reasons. One, it wasn't written that way, but when I was, like, editing the film, I was just looking for good music to put in. And for some reason, whenever I would find, like, the indie singer-songwriter stuff that I listened to yeah. in my life, there was just something distracting about the lyrics. Like, sometimes the lyrics wouldn't be appropriate. Sometimes it was just the vocals stuck out.
Fair enough.
And I was going through this phase where I was watching all these, like, French New Wave films. And I was like, and I started listening to kind of like these French singer-songwriters. And part of me, I stumbled across this songwriter named Jean-François Abbé.
Yeah.
And I found him on Bandcamp, which is a kind of a great resource for filmmakers. If you don't if you don't know where to find music, just go on Bandcamp and okay. start listening to good music. And email people if you can use their song. You can get some great independent artists that way.
Thank you very much for saying that.
It's really talented people that just haven't been discovered yet. So I stumbled across his music and I put it in, and that, like, the vocal distraction I was telling you about,
yeah.
wasn't there, because it is this, you know, it's this other language. Yeah. And it almost becomes its own instrument.
It does.
The other thing I really like about it is it kind of, well, we were talking about, like, showing Baltimore in a different way.
Yeah.
To me, I love the French singer-songwriter music because it almost romanticized Baltimore in those montages a little bit.
Yeah.
So it kind of went back to, like, I haven't seen this version or in this light before.
Right.
So to kind of, like, show Baltimore as this, like, beautiful thing with this kind of, like, romantic music under it, it kind of, like, gave it this cool effect.
Wow. Never even thought of that. That it really did, though. Nicely yeah. done. Nicely done.
Thank
so
you.
Here's the thing I gotta ask, because, well, you didn't write a script, so you didn't really have anything to sell.
Mm.
You know, you couldn't have sold a script. You couldn't, like, you decided to make this film yourself, and I was gonna ask why make it yourself, but you kind of answered that already. You had to make it.
It is hard to, like, and I think there's a few people that have done it, like, sold a pitch on a scriptment, or they've gotten the leeway.
Tough,
like, I think the Duplass brothers have done that a few times, where it's just like, all right, so we're going to make a movie for $250,000. Just trust us. It's going to be good. And I think when you're like them and you have a track record and
exactly.
you can attract a few good actors that yeah. with recognizable faces,
yeah.
it's easier to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to do that.
Yeah. Nor I.
But the cool thing is, it's like with this burst in technology with the DSLRs, you have no excuse not to make it anyway.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's like, I think our movies turned out pretty well, and at least we have the ability to make it and put it out there. And
yeah.
Alex Ferrari's done that with this
yeah,
film.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you know, once you decided to make the film, though, and you put that treatment together, what were your steps to get this thing off the ground?
So the first incarnation of the movie, when I was talking about, we were trying to make it with an Indian actress. We reached out to a few actresses, and I think that this kind of ties into what we're talking about, to where we're not selling the movie to financiers, but we are selling it to talent we don't know.
Right.
And it is hard when somebody is, like, even if it's a local person, an experienced actress who is going to read our 40-page document, be like, I don't understand
yeah,
this. Like, I don't understand what, like, the process or how that even works.
Yeah.
So it is good to, you know, with Kelly had worked with me twice before,
right.
Including Wits End. And Chris, you know, was a pretty good friend of mine. And, you know, I could show him the document and have conversations with him about it. And we could get on the same page in terms of, like, what the movie is, like, way before we start. So he bought in pretty quickly.
Right.
But yeah, it is tricky with, like, actors sometimes that just aren't familiar with that type of process.
Right.
It is interesting to kind of, like, pitch somebody on the idea just because that's all it is at this point. It is an idea.
Well, you know what? How I know that you self-funded this, right? So not a lot of payment must have went to people. I mean, I imagine it went to locations and food. More than anything else.
Yeah. So, as far as like, I could say the movie was made for $5,000.
Really?
Yeah. It's a tiny movie. And it's kind of why we can take chances on this stuff because you're not spending a lot of money on
right.
it. But yeah, as far as like where that money went, food is a big one. You know, we're feeding 4 crew people and anywhere from 2 to 6 actors.
Yep.
Mainly 2, but you know, we had some day players come
That's
in.
True.
But I'd say like about half of the budget went to post-production.
Oh, right.
So like cleaning up the sound, was a big thing. Like there was a lot of like fixing and post and stuff that it just took a little bit of like time and some money to, you know, kind of work on that. And then we paid for some of the music in the movie as well.
Right. So what I wanted to ask too about the editing. Is mm-hmm. because there was a lot of improv, did that affect how much footage you had and how much you had to go through in order to edit this?
Sometimes. Like, so with, like, a lot of, like, the dialogue scenes, like, they, kind of like what I said before, it's like the movie does become scripted by take 4.
Right.
So a lot of it is, it's no different than like shooting like a regular scripted scene. You're just picking the best takes. So it's not like a lot of like added story or like tangents. It's not like different. It's not like, like I know some improvised movies, an editor will get in there and be like, man, there's 10 different versions
right.
of this scene.
Right.
We didn't have that necessarily.
Okay. Fair enough.
But there still was a lot of footage.
Yeah.
And I'd say, like, on the low end, we would have, like, 4 or 5 takes of a scene. And on the high end, we would have probably about a dozen takes of a scene.
Wow. That's a lot to wade through.
It is, definitely.
But it was worth it, right?
Absolutely. But I think as far as, like, improvised versus, like, scripted, I don't think that, like, that amount of takes is, like, different than...
Right.
Any other movie that we would have worked on.
I wouldn't go a dozen. I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't go a dozen. No way.
I'm not David Fincher and doing 99 at least.
Oh, there you go. That's true. That's right. True. That would be insane. Yeah, so how long did it take you to make the film from start to finish?
So, in terms of shooting, we shot this movie... It was spread out because, again, we were working around actor schedules.
Right.
But we, like, I'd say it was, like, we shot it for, with Chris and Kelly, it was, like, they shot 14 days over a 3-month period.
Okay, fair enough.
Which kind of sucks in terms of, like, it's hard to get a rhythm when
right.
you have, like, the time off in between.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to go off somewhere and shoot for 3 weeks and get
yeah.
production done.
Yeah.
But the good thing about that is, like, I am an editor by trade, and I'm editing my own movie.
Yep.
So I could edit scenes we just did, show them to the actors, get them excited about, you know, where the movie's going. But also it could shape the story, and we could rewrite stuff if we had to based
oh, right.
on the footage we have. So
right, so you would be checking the footage as you went along, right?
Right.
Okay.
And you could see what scenes are working
right.
or not working, and we did reshoot 1 or 2 scenes
oh,
based on footage we shot. That yeah, I'm glad, and I would recommend that to any filmmaker. Like if you can edit while you're shooting,
because yeah.
it's going to save you a lot of time
right.
at the end.
Right. Well, beautiful. So then you had post-production. How long did that take?
So post-production on this movie was tricky for 2 reasons. One, we had to ADR 2 scenes in the movie, and which I ended up learning how to do ADR myself and recording it and editing it. So that took a little bit of time just to get the skills to do. But I am really proud at how that turned out. I've seen some movies with way bigger budget, way more talent, have way worse ADR than ours. So
you know what? I'm not going to lie. I watch films to enjoy, but I also kind of watch as a filmmaker. And there were a couple of scenes I went, that's going to be a hell for sound. This place would be, there'd be cars going by, there'd be people, like the park, even though it was later, there might be some traffic noise, there might be some airplane noise, like there, and I'm thinking, oh man, there must have been some ADR in there.
Yeah, there definitely was, and there's two scenes in particular where part of it was just like the situation and filming, you're filming outside on a live street, and you're just you're not going to get perfect sound.
Exactly.
Some of it was when you're working on a no-budget movie, you're going to have people that aren't as experienced doing it, and there's definitely a learning curve, just there's a learning curve with me doing anything.
But the
cool thing about this is, like, we do have the technology that is pretty available and pretty cheap at this point, that there's no excuse not to be able to buy a $200 microphone and probably the same recorder you're doing your podcast on to kind of record.
A Zoom?
I use the Zoom. I use the H4N. What do you use?
I've got the 5. I'm using the 5 right now.
You can use that for recording any sound for any of your
movies.
Awesome.
It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I overuse it.
And I'm also somebody that I'm a little bit of an autodidact, where it's like I like learning things. I like doing new things. So it's like I, as much as like the sound was like a pain in our movie, I like the challenge of like learning how to do a new thing and working with the actors to kind of like get it right. And I'm just lucky that they were so cool and on board with like putting in the extra time to
do it. I think maybe in your DNA somewhere it says indie filmmaker. Like if you love those challenges, I mean, it's like you were born to be an indie filmmaker if you like those kind of challenges.
Well, man, if you don't like these challenges, don't make movies.
Don't make movies. Absolutely. There's always going to be something.
Yeah, there's another more fulfilling thing that you're going to enjoy doing. So, but for me, it's like I can't do anything else. Or I can't picture myself wanting to do anything else.
It's inbred. It's in there. You're itching to do it all the time. So,
absolutely.
You know what? I have to ask you about distribution. Mm-hmm. Now, how did you go about distributing this film?
So the movie, this is all new to me. So the movie just came out on Amazon Prime last Friday, so a week ago. And it's on Vimeo on demand, which we basically did for worldwide rights because Amazon isn't everywhere.
Exactly.
So like in Canada, you can get it on Vimeo.
Vimeo on demand.
So I went about that. Well, first of all, we had a pretty successful festival run.
We got into seven
film festivals, and so we got to watch it with an audience a few times. And so anyone making like low budget movies or even independent movies at all, like it's like if I think I'd say $5 million and under, like I think that the festival run has turned into the theatrical run for these types of movies.
Right.
And then the life for most of the people are going to watch them, it's online and streaming. So we talked to a few producers, reps, and a few like small distributors after the festival run. And honestly, like the distribution deals, none of them were like really that appealing. And it's not about money. Like I don't care about, like I put $5,000 into this movie. Like I know putting that up front, I'm probably not going to get that back. But like I would talk to a distributor, even if I wasn't going to make money, if it meant getting more eyes on the movie.
Right.
And I feel like the distributors that were going to look at a movie the size of ours, they weren't really going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Like I think that they would give it a similar release to what we're doing it now with like really little promotion behind it. And we still wouldn't make money.
Yeah.
So I thought about after that, using an aggregator like Distributor or Quiver is the other one.
Yeah.
And I actually had a great conversation with Jason Brubaker, who was on your podcast.
Yeah, great guy.
Super great dude, super smart dude. But like at the end of the day, I do think that these aggregators are great, but like for a movie like ours, it just doesn't make sense to have a $5,000 movie and then spend $3,500 getting on these platforms when people probably aren't going to discover it.
Yeah.
So I talked to a friend of mine, he's actually a horror filmmaker named Sean Jones. Yep. And Sean was like, what you should do, put it online yourself on like Amazon Prime, and whatever money you would have given to like distributor or an aggregator, like put it into marketing. So that's the way we're going.
There you go.
Now. And I mean, we're only a few days into it, but we've gotten some really nice feedback on the movie and people are watching it online.
Good.
So
I know that with Prime, it's all about hours rather than clicks. So
it's about the minutes streamed.
Yeah, yeah. The minutes that you stream. So when you get up to a certain amount, then it goes to X number of cents per, you know, hour.
Right. Yeah, like minute. I think that, like, I did the math, and like if somebody watched our movie, we'd get like 6 cents.
Right.
I think.
Well, thanks for sharing that, because not a lot of people would.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, like, I don't know why, and I've heard podcasts where people don't share this type of stuff, but
this helps.
It's all out information. You can Google it. The information's out.
Yeah, there. That's how I found out.
I don't know. I think that people should share this information with fellow filmmakers.
Absolutely.
Kind of help each other out. But,
well, here's the one thing that's really astounding, and I mean this. I would not have pegged this for a $5,000 movie. I would have put it higher.
Cool. Oh, that's really nice of you. And that's,
I would have put it higher. I mean that. Because I'm thinking, well, I didn't know. Like, you did what you should have done, which is, here's I have these actors that I know, I have these people that I know,
right.
I can pull these people in. I didn't know that. So I'm thinking, you're paying actors, you're paying all these people, you're paying for locations, you're paying for this, you're paying for that, and it looks amazing. So it could be on a higher-end camera that you had to rent. So I'm thinking this is 20, 25. Like, that's what I thought.
I appreciate you saying that. And like sometimes with like resource filmmaking, like the numbers skewed in terms of like I spent $5,000 on it, but like there's a lot of favors there.
Oh,
there
yeah.
is a lot of things that are worth way more than our budget.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Like there's probably movies with way bigger budgets that are still like small indie films that have $50,000 budgets that probably have less resources and a lot of like free, you know, work that probably would go for, you know, more than that. But yeah, that's a tribute to like the, you know, Kevin and like those guys and these great actors. And there's also kind of like what we talked about, like if you want a nicer camera or if you want, there's always stuff you don't want. There's never a better special effect than two good actors.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what your budget is.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, two charismatic people talking on a screen, to me, that's always going to be really interesting.
I was blown away when you said it was improv dialogue and like, it was so good. It really was.
Oh,
I enjoyed
you.
It.
That's
I
really nice
it.
Of you to say.
They were great. They were great. I can't lie. I just can't lie. I enjoyed the film, really enjoyed the film. So I know where people can see it now. Amazon Prime, Vimeo on demand. Please, people, get out there and watch Bored in the USA. It's a fantastic film. You'll love it. So what's next for you?
That's a good question.
Hopefully, sleep. That would be good.
That does sound nice. yeah, with making movies, I think I'm in a rhythm because I am wearing so many hats on these things. It takes about a year to make the movie and a year to get them out into the world.
Right.
So hopefully now that the movie's out there, I'm going to start thinking about what's next. And hopefully we're filming it within the next year. And maybe this time next year, we're kind of talking about what, you know, film festivals and kind of how you can see it. I'm always making stuff. Like since we made this movie, I made two shorts relatively recently. One of them's starting to play film festivals and as far as features go, I have a few different ideas, but I'm not locked into one yet, but I'm sure I'll be filming something by, you know, within the next year.
That's amazing. Where can people find you?
So yeah, if you go to the Born in the USA Film website, right. BornintheUSAFilm.com,
right.
It has a link to like our Facebook page and kind of other work. And I'm always trying to update it and put okay. different stuff on there. And people are always welcome to contact me if they ever have any questions.
Well, I'm definitely going to put that in the show notes so that people can just click on it and get right to you.
Oh, thank you so
you
much.
You know what?
I really appreciate
here's
that.
here's the big three. The final three questions I ask every guest that comes on the show.
Huh?
This is the just I don't know how I pick these questions, but what is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
The biggest filmmaking mistake, man, there's so many. I mean, I think that like there's always like a million technical things right. that you can like look back on. Which that just comes with like experience. Like I think with any small budget movie, 9 out of 10 times you're going to have audio problems just because it's so hard to get good audio.
Yeah.
And you know, I spent so much time learning how to do ADR to fix some of that audio. Just in general, like I think that I'm at my weakest and I'm my worst version of the filmmaker I am when I'm not trusting my gut. I think I have like pretty good instincts in general. And I think when I don't kind of like trust them, I think that's when I get in trouble.
Yeah.
Like I could think of like with like a project I was, you know, trying to make, we cast an actor and there was just something about this actor that wasn't right. Like he was a really nice guy and he was a really talented actor. But like I could tell like in rehearsals that it just didn't work. And we shot some stuff and I could tell it didn't work. And a decision I should have made in that first, you know, rehearsal yeah. came like way too late and we right. were like screwed with that project.
Right.
But like, so like since, you know, then and with other projects, I've definitely tried to be more, you know, sticking to my gut and just yeah. kind of like if I like something and have an instinct that something's right, there's a good chance it's going to be right.
Right.
So just trying to kind of, you know, kind of trust that and work on that.
Yeah. Trust your instincts. Beautiful. What is the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
Best filmmaking advice. This isn't specific to filmmaking, but I think it's specific to like art in general. Somebody actually gave me this advice when I was doing like stand up, but I've always been obsessed with like finding my voice and like kind of like figuring out what kind of like artist or at the time it was like comedian, like what that is. And I think any filmmaker can relate to this. Like there was when I was in my early 20s, I wanted to be Paul Thomas Anderson or Quentin Tarantino. And I'm sure there's a million people like that.
Yeah.
So I was talking to a comedian about like finding my voice and what does that look like? How do you get there? And he gave me this like great analogy where he was just like, you got to let your voice like find itself. Like you can't force it to go one way or another. And the analogy he used was in Maryland, we have like junior college or community college. I'm not sure what you yep. Canadians call yep. it, but there was the Community College of Baltimore County and they built this new campus and the architects couldn't figure out where to put the sidewalks and they didn't know what to do. And finally they said, screw it. What we're going to do, we're not going to put any sidewalks in the first year and wherever the dead grass ends up, that's where students are walking. That's where we're going to put the paths in next year.
There you go.
And before you know it, at the end of the year, you look and there's a very clear path where people are walking. Like yeah. they found where you're supposed to go.
That's right.
And he was like, finding your voice is like that. Like you not can't force it. You can't try to make your own path. You wow. gotta like let yourself go where you're supposed to go.
Wow, that's
and I think
brilliant.
I think with filmmaking, wow. I've definitely done that in terms of like as much as I've tried to be certain things and as much as I've tried to go in directions, it wasn't until I started kind of like following my own instincts and kind of following my own path. That's when I started making things that were interesting. And hopefully I'll kind of continue to do that and build on that.
Oh man. Great advice. Great advice, man. That's great. Name a film that inspired you. Oh, okay. I know it's tough. There could be a million of them.
Yeah. I'm looking around my office because I have a bunch of movie posters. So there's a bunch of them. I have to say, can I give you a few of them?
Sure, absolutely.
Kevin Smith's Clerks is a big one.
Oh, well, come on. For an indie filmmaker, yeah. Poof.
Just like it's inspiring that it's like every filmmaker should use that as a credo of like $28,000 on credit cards. Yep. Make a movie with your friends. Yep. You know, just do it.
Yeah.
I love Richard Linklater, and that shows a lot in our movies. And I think, like, the Before trilogy, like, our Born in the USA gets compared to in some ways because it is two people having a conversation for a day. But, like, to me, it's more than just the aesthetic of it or just, like, the setting of it. Like, to me, his movies, in particular, particularly Before Sunset,
right?
Like that's a feeling I want to chase in movies. Yeah. Like it's just I want to fall in love with two characters and feel like I'm just watching these like intimate moments, and that's something that, like, inspires me.
Yeah, well, you did it with Born in the USA for me. That's exactly how I described. I fell in love with these characters, and I wanted to know more. I just wanted to keep going on the journey with them. It was just lovely.
I need to talk to you every once in a while. Just for my ego boost. Listen, that's so nice.
I'm not blowing smoke up your ass here. This was a great movie. Like,
and
I said it earlier. It's not like I'm saying to people, don't go see Ant-Man. There's room for both. You gotta open your heart to some of these smaller indie films, and people will fall in love with this film if they see it. They've just got to go see it. So, people, please, Amazon Prime or Vimeo On Demand, Bored in the USA. Mike, you're awesome, man. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, and I really hope I get to watch your movie soon. So,
oh, that'll be a while. That'll be a while.
Well, I hope I get to see stuff you've done, and regardless, I look forward to keep listening to the podcast because it really is a wonderful resource for filmmakers.
Thank you very much.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking and on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.